development for Wednesday, March 28th. A month, a little less than a month for Senate bills here. And we're going to begin today by opening up a work session on Senate Bill 151. Members, we've had this a couple times, and I think we're ready to move it on to the next committee. So, Janet, you might remind us of this bill and the dash one that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 151 was the bill that started out as extending the sunset on the Oregon Enterprise Zone program from the current sunset of June 30th, 2009 to June 30th, 2021. You have at from today or previously the dash one amendments, and they would extend the sunset instead of from 2021 to 2013. They also, beginning on the on the second page, require an evaluation of the Enterprise Zone program and a report to the 75th Legislative Assembly. And it says the evaluation will include a cost-benefit analysis of the state on the state and local economy and services, and to the degree to which incentives affect investment and employment in the zones. You also have to replace some information that was provided by the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department about requirements for reporting by the businesses that are in enterprise zones and by the local governments, and a one-year analysis of some of the revenues that are foregone by the various taxing districts within each county. So, Mr. Chair, this bill does have a subsequent referral to the Finance and Revenue Committee.
Okay, thank you, Janet. And colleagues, as you remember, we've talked about a number of things, and I really appreciate the work Senator George has done in trying to provide some ideas on this, and Senator Montes Anderson and others, and keeping in touch with me about some of those. And I think our general conclusion is at this point probably ready to move it on to Senator Deckert in the Revenue Committee, where Senator Starr is as well. And this one, as Janet mentioned, reduces the Enterprise Zone extension until 2013 and requires that report be delivered to us on cost-benefit at the start of the next session, 09. So if we don't like it, we can change it then again as well. But if there is no objection to that, I would ask a motion for the dash one.
I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 151.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 151. Discussion? Any objection?
I move Senate Bill 151 as amended to the Committee on Finance and Revenue.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 151 as amended to the Committee on Finance and Revenue. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Yeah, so Deckard excused. Yeah, the guy's going to get it. Okay. Let's open up public hearing on Senate Bill 350. Janet.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 350 was introduced at the request of the Oregon Community and Economic Development Committee, and was a result of a reorganization of the statutes and a result of a budget note from the last session budget for the department and an interim review of all the statutes by the agency and stakeholders did ensue as a result. And Senate Bill 350 is before you. I'm not going to spend any time going over what it does, but the agency is here. There are amendments in the works for this bill, and so they'll be able to talk about both the background, what the bill is intended to do, and the amendments that are coming. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Jan. Mr. Salzgiver, you want to come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Salzgiver. I serve as Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Economic and Community Development. With me today is our Regulatory and Legislative Counsel, Paul Grove. And Paul and his colleagues have done an enormous amount of work on the technical aspects of the bill drafting process. Mr. Chairman and committee members, what I'd like to do today is... first of all, thank you for letting us come and brief you on what was a major undertaking and the result of that, and then go through sort of on a section-by-section basis, not the full bill, but the highlights, the major thrust of the bill, as we were going forward. As Ms. Adkins indicated to you, this bill is the result of an interesting case of self-flagellation that we requested and was included in a budget note in Senate Bill or House Bill 5164, which appropriated dollars to the agency for the 05-07 biennium. We requested the opportunity to go in and take a look at all of the statutes that affected or directed our agency. And process was a long one. It was very involved, and it followed a number of other activities that we had pursued in the last year and a half, one of which was to reorganize the agency and make it more efficient and effective and responsive to our customers and to the legislature and to the governor. We went originally from an agency that had has been the subject and focus of a lot of attention over the years, and we were dealing at the end of 2005 with what I used to call a sedimentary layer of statutory guidance that was about 10 miles high and in some cases very contradictory or was out of date or did not give us the kind of authority that we needed to help the state compete in the 21st century. And so after we finished the session in 05, we embarked in the department on a fairly extensive reorganization effort. Our agency had gone from having a peak of about 149 employees in 1999 to 107 at the end of 2005. We've since recovered a few of those employees and are now at 117, but we're still well below the peak that the agency was at, and it may have actually been higher in past years. We were left with an organization that was structured in the way that the legislature and the governors in the 1980s and the 1990s had asked us to be structured. We had 9 divisions in an agency of 107 people. And coming from my private sector background, that offended me somewhat. We tried to shrink the spans and the levels of administrative framework that we had in front of us, and we compressed the agency from 9 divisions to 4 to simplify our internal operations, reduce our overhead, and try to streamline our administrative operations. Also, as I mentioned, after we finished the reorganization, we also began a strategic planning process, a fairly comprehensive one. And as a result, the agency has a new strategic plan now with a very simplified and easy to remember mission statement, which is to advance Oregon's economy. We have 3 primary strategic goals which we are pursuing, which is to work with our communities to build their capacity to be business ready, to work to retain, expand, and recruit new businesses to the state, and to help the state be innovative and compete in a global economy. Those are our 3 main goals. And so in the space of that 18-month period, we did the reorganization, we did the strategic planning, and then the third big element was to do the statutory review. And what we did was embark on an internal and then connected to our key external stakeholders and to the legislature through the interim process, worked through each of the statutes that affected our agency and came forward through the Economic Development Commission with a series of 27 recommendations for statutory change. You should have that document here, and the principles that led to Senate Bill 350 are encompassed in this document. The work of the statutory review basically fell into 3 categories: administration, business finance, and community development. And those recommendations were received by the interim Economic Development Oversight Committee, and in October of last year were passed by the committee unanimously, the Senate Oversight Committee, as an interim bill, and that became Senate Bill 350. In the time since the bill was drafted until now, staff has looked through it to make sure that the statutory recommendations that were submitted, or the recommendations that were submitted by our commission, were incorporated in a way that we could implement. That review, since the beginning of the session, has led to a number of staff recommendations for change, and we have submitted those amendments to Ledge Council, and those are being processed right now. So rather than focus on the actual printed text of Senate Bill 350, what I'd like to do is walk you through some of the highlights of the recommendations so you know the thrust of the bill, and then stop and answer any questions that you might have, if that's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
In the area of administration, the department identified and the commission identified that the statutes governing administration of the agency were its highest priority. So what we wanted to do was make sure the basic administrative framework of the agency was clear, was streamlined. During the latter part of 2005, Senator Betsy Johnson, who became the chair of the Interim Oversight Committee, and I had a long conversation, and we identified basically four priorities or four goals for the reorganization of the agency. We were looking to make it more responsive, more flexible and agile, more efficient, and much more effective in terms of showing results. Those were her goals for us. And so in the administrative drafting process, that's what we focused on. We first started by looking at all of the existing statutes and making recommendations for provision, or to identify provisions that were outdated, and identifying others that could be consolidated to ensure that our new strategic plan aligned with the direction of the new statutes. We also resulted in a set of statements that consolidated the purpose and economic strategy of the department, as well as providing clarity to us about the administrative responsibilities and operations of the department and the commission which oversees us. Interestingly enough, one of the things that I identified when I first came to the agency right away is that in an agency our size, we are responsible for staffing or supporting 9 different councils and commissions. And for a staff that small, it's a massive undertaking to stay on top of those. And so one of the recommendations that was made was to consolidate the number of commissions and councils that are in play by statute, and to have a single one, which would be the Economic Development Commission. We've proposed that it be expanded by 2 members to take into account the interests that led to the creation of the other councils and commissions we support, make sure they were represented in the larger commission, and yet and also give the governor and the director the administrative flexibility to create and sunset councils or commissions or task forces as they see fit without having all of them in statute. That by expanding that commission that way, it gives us additional opportunity for geographic diversity and also for interest diversity. So having people who are specialists in technology or specialists or knowledge specialists in small business or in international trade or in other things. So we have also, the commission has proposed that the number of named boards and commissions in our statutes be eliminated, and that we or the governor have the ability to create those through rule or executive order instead. And some of them we've asked be sent in previous organizational alignments, a good example being the tourism area around tourism. We've recommended that be moved to a different ORS so that it's not parked under our umbrella anymore, because it's not structurally there anymore anyway. And then we've proposed, for example, that the Oregon Progress Board, which previously was under our statute, be moved under the authority of the Department of Administrative Services, which is where it's currently placed. The other administrative change that I'd highlight is in statute right now, we are required to have trade offices in certain nations. Well, over the intervening years, the economic strategy of the department and of the state has moved away from a nation-based economic development to cluster-based or sector-based economic development. And so we are looking to have the statutory requirement of having trade offices in certain places removed and allow us the administrative flexibility to create, put them where they need to be, if they need to be there, so that we can control our costs and we can target constrained resources in the most optimum way possible. So that's a basic overview of the administrative changes that were proposed.
Senator Stark has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for your explanation here. I'd like to flesh out a little bit more the discussion around the elimination of the various boards and commissions and broadening the overall definition. Are you saying that the department is committed to having representatives of the commission serve on what wouldn't be statutory committees but administrative committees that would be set up by the commission that would target the specific areas that these commissions that had been in statute, I assume, are going to be created? I'd like a little bit more commitment, especially in the international trade side, that the department's not stepping away from its commitment to help businesses compete internationally, do the connection, particularly for small businesses that are working to develop those international relationships. Talk a little bit about the department's commitment to maintaining the services to Oregon small business that are either sourcing internationally or hoping to sell a widget internationally.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I appreciate the opportunity to expand on that. First of all, during the reorganization, one of the things that we did was, recognizing the reduced resources that we had available to us, we reorganized again around the cluster strategy, the international section. We took the international division and the business development division and combined them into a new division, which is business and trade development. The thinking there, I think we've all read Thomas Friedman's book, The World is Flat. But my experience in my former life told me that we were operating in a global climate. I think that's been validated over and over again. And so our thinking was to have a single business development strategy that comprehended both domestic activity and international activity. So we restructured those two divisions into one. We restructured it further by having the international section focused on key economic sectors, and we hired staff who were acknowledged experts both internationally and in those cluster areas. So that was one way that we maintained our commitment to that work. Secondly, the proposal was to consolidate as many boards and commissions as possible. And so the commission recommended, the main commission, the Economic Development Commission, recommended the consolidation, if you will, into a larger Economic Development Commission. In the intervening time, I think the International Trade Commission has come to see that there's value in that. And while I won't speak for them, their recent discussions with the governor's office and with us indicate that they are supportive of moving in that direction. They actually see an opportunity now in a consolidated environment with a renewed charge from the governor to reset their charter, if you will, and move forward in an aggressive mode on international business development. Third, on the small business front, another part of the reorganization was to create a defined small business section within the Business and Trade Development Division. And during the interim, we requested and received resources to hire three people, a small business manager, a small business program coordinator, and an administrative assistant to run that new section. And so we have launched on that endeavor. And so I think what we've tried to do is continue to recognize the individual components but meld them together into a unified planning structure and administrative structure that makes sure that they're all marching in the same direction. Does that answer your question? Sort of.
A long answer.
Not really.
Okay.
The International Trade Commission, it's abolished in statute, but is it going to remain as a subgroup within the OECD overall structure?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, yes, it will. And the governor's office has indicated, Deputy Chief of Staff Alley met with the International Trade Commission just about a month ago and reaffirmed that commitment.
That would have been the answer I was looking for.
That's the one. Okay. I just want to give you the other background, though.
And I think we should talk more about how we assist what really are small businesses that are coming up with great innovative ideas, both to source and to market internationally. And if somehow in this transition, in this reformation of the agency, which for the most part, the 10,000 square foot or the 10,000 foot level sounds good, but if we've lost our ability to help Oregon small business, do that international kind of work where there's huge opportunities for Oregon companies and building Oregon companies, that would be troublesome to me if we've lost that ability in this clustered move toward clusters, because you don't know what the next great new innovation that's going to come from the great minds of Oregonians, and it might not fit into a particular established cluster. So we can have those conversations maybe offline.
Senator, I would point out that by default, most of the work we do is with the small business and medium-sized businesses, because the large ones typically don't need our help. It's the small ones that come to us. And when export or foreign inward investment opportunities come to us, they're usually with those folks. But we are absolutely committed to that.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Senator Montes Anderson. We have about 15 more minutes, by the way, just helps the verbiage.
Community Investment Fund, I know that the monies were transferred to the I'm talking about on page 55, section 84, when the balance of the monies received would be transferred to the account of the Oregon Tourism Commission. But now we have set up a new Community Investment Fund. And is that affecting the Oregon Tourism Commission?
Senator Metzger and Senator Montes Anderson, the answer is that was the practical effect of the language as it was drafted. In reviewing the bill, we found that problem too, and it was certainly pointed out to us by our colleagues at Travel Oregon. And as a result, we've made recommendations to change it in a way that does not affect their funding. Mr. Chairman, if I continue, the business finance area is just some of the highlights there. The goal of that section in business finance is to streamline the processes that we use to manage our funds and better protect the agency's business finance programs and our ability to secure the state's interests in those programs. So the commission recommended a number of changes. Among them are to eliminate the department's the limit on our ability to buy out superior liens. It was capped at $1 million. We're recommending that be eliminated so we can capture or have an improved security position there. We're recommending our ability to retrieve and use some of the money that we receive in interest payments through our capital access program and channel those back into administration so that we don't have to come back to the legislature for new resources. And we've looked to streamline some other processes in the administration of our business programs and ensure that they are consistent with current federal law. And frankly, again, to Senator Starr's point, to better serve our small business community, in particular through the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund. As far as small business, again, we have recommended some changes that we would hope would move the whole state to consistency around defining a small business by recommending a threshold of 100 employees or fewer. We have recommended that some statutes be modified which govern the department's business retention services so that we can help businesses earlier in the business cycle and get out ahead of them before they become a failing business. Right now, we have to wait until they are ready to fail before we can help them, and we don't want to do that. And then we've done some other changes that are targeted to small business service improvement beyond the staffing increases that we've sought. On the final side, community development, This is, of course, the biggest part of our agency. 75% of the agency's funding flows into and out of the Community Development Division. The biggest focus we had early in my career, I worked with the port community as a congressional staffer. I recognize fully the importance of ports to the state's economic fabric. And so we moved quickly to try to serve them better. But ports are called out as a division in our statutes, but interestingly, through administrative action of past directors, there hasn't been a ports division in reality in the department since 1998. It was effectively sunsetted at that time, and we haven't had staffing or anyone focused specifically on ports. It was sort of diffused out through the agency. We, again, while recommending and in the interest of seeking administrative flexibility so the director and future directors can have the ability to change when necessary, we are recommending the sunsetting of the required division, but we are asking for increases in our grant awards to ports, to helping them with technical assistance and other things. We want to increase the amount we can loan from the Port Planning and Marketing Fund. Right now it's capped at $25,000. We'd like to request doubling that. And we'd like to increase the percentage of port revolving fund funds that can be transferred to the Port Planning and Marketing Fund. We are also have, as I mentioned, we've added a ports manager and a ports fund coordinator to our staff, which did not exist in the last couple of years. And we have activated and elevated our interest in working with the port community to ensure that their business practices and planning is sound and taking a look at creating a statewide port strategic plan. We're also making some recommendations about the infrastructure funds that we administer, the Special Public Works Fund, so-called SPWF, basically to ensure that the use of those funds are channeled in a way that truly helps local government be business ready and make their communities business ready. Some of those changes are listed here. I won't go through them one by one. But basically the goal of that effort is to just make the fund more flexible, give our ability to channel funds in a way that is meaningful to communities and make the delivery of the services more effective. We're also on a number of other fronts in the Community Development Fund or Community Development Division. We are looking to improve our administration of the Water Wastewater Fund, the Regional Rural Program, which is basically to create a rural investment fund and consolidate the use of that so that those resources go to local governments in a way that best meets their regional needs. We're looking to improve our ability to leverage funds for brownfield cleanup as we go forward, for example, in meeting the legislature and governor's charge to us to continue to identify certified industrial sites. We have now kind of done the low-hanging fruit, and we're trying to make sure that additional lands that are available for redevelopment are cleaned up in a timely and environmentally sound way, and so we're looking for changes in the administration of the Brownfield Fund. There are some other changes that we're recommending that are allow us to make the statutes conforming with other state and federal statutes, and so that is really the outline of Senate Bill 350. It's a big bill in number of pages, but it's really fairly simple in its charge. And with the changes that we have submitted, we think it's we expect it to be a very good start in helping this agency meet the expectations that are made of us and position the state well for being a strong economic development partner going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Salzgiver. Can you touch on what are the key elements of the amendments other than what you have talked about in the writing? Is there other things that we're going to be seeing in the amendments that you are drafting to 350 that have not been covered either in your presentation of the bill with the suggestions?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Grove, who's been involved in the technical drafting work of that, and let him address that question, if that's all right.
Okay. And, welcome. State your name for the record. And again, just as a preview, I'll clear up the technical things. I don't know what the substantive changes that we may be seeing in addition to anything Mr. Salzgiver has said.
For the record, my name is Paul Grove. With the Economic and Community Development Department, Chair Metzger, and members of the committee. I think that what was included in the document that was given to you for Mr. Salzgiver's testimony encompasses the substantive changes that were made to Senate Bill 350. Two things that probably weren't specifically addressed by Mike in his testimony, the first being the removal of the Brownsfields Task Force. As Mike mentioned, we were trying to get away from establishing boards, commissions, etc., in statute. And upon further review, we decided that doing that task force would be better served administratively rather than in statute. Secondly, and probably most importantly, would be the Community Investment Fund that was created by Senate Bill 350. As staff and interested stakeholders reviewed it, it proved somewhat problematic in its administration, and so we scaled back and away from that and moved towards these specific recommendations towards our infrastructure funds, namely the flexibility between special public works and water wastewater.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Mott Sanders.
On that, you're not concerned that appointing these people, it might become a part of a good old boys network and abuse by special interests and friends and family, not necessarily family, but friends. I mean, that would be my concern of turning over the appointments to the board rather than having it be appointed by statute.
Oh, I see. Chair Metzger, Senator Montes-Anderson, I think what, if I'm hearing your question properly, what we are recommending is that the having in statute a Commission A, Commission B, Commission C, et cetera, be removed and have a single primary commission that would be still appointed by the governor.
Okay. Then
we're not looking to have any other change there.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Senator Decker.
And actually, Mr. Chair, this is just it really isn't a question. It's just a comment. We have to, and I don't know what, Mike, you've done with the International Trade Commission, but they have to have some mission defined. Having served ex officio for the last 2 years, it's a fine commission in terms of composition, and there's just nothing for them. There's nothing. The meetings are painful because you have all these fine people and no clear defined mission of what they're gathered there to do, unlike other commissions that the state has where there is. And so I think if we're going to continue that commission, we shouldn't ask these very busy people to continue doing what they are doing now.
Chair Metzger, Senator Deckert, Tim McCabe of the governor's office is here. Tim is the governor's economic development policy advisor, and he would, if with your indulgence, would like to address that question.
Welcome.
Chairman Metzger, for the record, I'm Tim McCabe, economic development policy advisor to the governor. And you're absolutely right, Senator Deckert. The governor is going to establish an executive order with explicit terms of what we're going to ask the International Trade Commission to do. In the past, as you said, there's a lot of talented people there, and we didn't utilize that talent. So going forward, we're going to, you know, give them a mission and ask them to help us in our trade missions.
Okay. And it's going to be done by executive order?
Executive order, correct.
So if the governor could work with at least, there's not a lot of legislators that are active on those issues. They tend to populate committees like this. So if he, in this case, could consult with those that are, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McCabe while he's here with us?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a different answer to the question that I got from Mr. Salzgiver. And it's troublesome to me, quite honestly, because an executive order can be issued and can be rescinded and can be changed and can go this way and can go that way. And as a, you know, not that administrative rules can't be changed either. And I agree with Senator Deckard that if we're going to have a commission, it needs to have clear direction, clear roles, responsibilities. And but as someone that cares about what we do internationally, I'm less comfortable with giving the governor, taking it out of statute, just saying, okay, governor, you do it. I don't know if, what the right answer is, but that's a little bit slightly different answer than what I got from Mr. Salzgiver.
Mr. McKay, when do we expect the governor's executive order?
We don't have a specific date yet. We did want to talk to Senator Deckard and others before this was issued, and we've already talked to the International Trade Commission, all the members there, and as Mike said, we had Alan Alley, the Deputy Chief of Staff, addressed the group, and our intent was to let them know that, yes, we didn't utilize their talents for the last 4 years. We know that, but going forward, we want to have a stronger relationship with the governor's office. So I will be at all the meetings. Okay, we will take an active part, and we're always going to seek their advice going forward. Now, Senator Starr, we'd be happy to talk with you around the executive order to make sure it meets the things you're looking for.
Well, one thing I would suggest is. That's why I asked you about the timeline of where we were in the crafting process of this executive order, because presenting those definitions and parameters to this committee might be valuable, so we know what the governor is thinking of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might even make some helpful suggestions to that order, and might help solidify continuation of that effort by placing that order in statute in Senate Bill 350, so that to take care of the issue of whether things would come or go. I mean, that might be at least something for the committee to consider if they would like to do that once we have something to look at and to see whether that is something we want to affirm in statute.
Senator Metzger, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. So on that one issue, we'd like to, as you talk to folks, to get back to Janet or myself or Senator Starr, as soon as we can, so we have some idea of when we might expect some kind of language on that. So when we bring this bill back, we can have that discussion as part of it, I think would be helpful. Would that be a good thing, Senator Starr? Other questions? Okay, what I would ask to do then is, as we get our amendments, and we'll get those circulated quickly so members can have them, because it is a big bill, and we can kind of put that in. I imagine we might have some other questions. And then when we bring the bill back, we'll be more up to speed on what they do and questions that we might have. And also, I would like to not bring it back until we have that parameter of what this group would look like and what their charge would be, so we can integrate that in this discussion and possibly even in the legislation if that was the will of the committee. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's colleagues, you have, Janet passed out a letter from the Port of Morrow regarding concerns on the language of the port's language in the bill. So make sure you have that for your record. Any other comments by the committee at this time? All right, so we'll close public hearing on Senate Bill 350 and have a discussion on that later. Okay. Okay. We're not going to be doing 748 today because we're waiting for amendments, so we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 829 and ask that Representative Flora, Senator Monis Anderson, and Darla Sturdy please come forward. Yes, Janet, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senate Bill 829 is Senator Monis Anderson's and Representative Flores' bill that would require transportation districts that operate light rail systems to install crossing gates at all unguarded pedestrian crossings of the light rail tracks. You have at your place four sets of amendments. You might note that the -1 amendments have been replaced by the -4 amendments. so you can discount the dash ones, I understand. The dash, so beginning with the dash four, they would require Metro to commission an independent study within a year of the at-grade crossings, a representative of pedestrian sample, a representative sample of pedestrian crossings of the light rail system that were constructed prior to 1995. So this is the MAX line and the older track. The dash two amendments keep the major provisions of the bill requiring the crossing gates at all crossings and provide a citation for the bill that would be Aaron's Bridge to Safety Act. And the dash three amendments replace the bill, and instead of requiring gates at all crossings, would require Metro to install a gate, or excuse me, TriMet to install a gate at the a specific location in Gresham where a school is right next to the crossing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Janet. And I think, as we'll hear from our testimony, we'll be kind of focusing on the dash four amendment as people have been working on that. So welcome, whoever would like to. I got three ladies I can't pick, so.
I go first.
You go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm very happy to be here. Back in, I'm Senator Lori Montes-Anderson representing Gresham, Troutdale, Fairview, and Wood Village, and, back in January, Darla Sturdy came to me, or I met her at Cafe Delirium, and she told me about a tragic accident that happened with her son at one of our crossings at on the MAX rail system. And it actually instigated the bill that Representative Flores and I are sponsoring today. We really need to, I started asking questions regarding the safety at these rail crossings. I hadn't even thought about that. And so when I started asking questions, it was very difficult to get any information regarding how many accidents have happened along the MAX rail lines and the safety standards, and so that's why I had introduced the dash one amendments. And after talking with the Department of Transportation as well as TriMet, the dash fours actually resulted from after talks with them. I just want to, once we have the department come talk, I may have some questions, but I just want to say it's terrible to lose a child, and we truly want to have the environment within our cities safe and rural areas also, and this is one attempt to do that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Representative Flores.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Linda Flores, State Representative for House District 51, and I would like to thank Senator Montes-Anderson for her ongoing good work and assistance in helping support Darla Sturdy. And I am here to introduce her as a very special lady, and many of you have, if not all of you, have already met her. She's worked very hard to get hearings on a couple of bills that are related to safety for bicyclists and pedestrians near MAX and light rail and buses. You have made notice at the top of Senate Bill 829, it reads, at the request of Darla Sturdy in member of Aaron Wagner Sturdy. Aaron was killed by a MAX train 4 years ago, and he was just 16. Today, Darla is here to encourage you to adopt Senate Bill 829 so that other families don't have to go through the tragic loss that her family has had to endure. And I would like then for you to hear her story in this official setting. It has been a journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Ms. Sturdy, welcome.
Thank you.
Just in case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for inviting me here today. First of all, for the record, I've handed out a letter from Mayor Shane Bemis, and I just want to make note of that. I'd just gotten it to support my amendments, so I've given it out to you. My name is Darla Sturdy, and I'm a general manager of a hot tub company that has five stores. I've worked there for 7 years. I'm here as a mother. I'm going to tell you about my son. I'm going to show you a snapshot of TriMet safety records with facts, a pie chart that I have gathered from three different sources to prove why they need an independent safety study. I'm also here to explain why TriMet needs to install safety gates at Civic Drive and the Max Line. Like many of you, I have a family that I deeply care about that means more to me than anything. Maybe you or someone else you know has lost someone close, such as a family member. I lost my son. God blesses you with children for you to take care of, to love them, to teach them, but not to outlive them. My son had many great qualities, though I will only touch on a few. He started baseball at the age of 5 and played 9 years. He began Taekwondo at the age of 8, and at the age of 9, he went to the Junior Olympics and placed 4th in the nation. He started football at the 5th grade and played 6 years. In middle school, he played basketball, did track and wrestling, placing 1st in many tournaments. Student body president his 8th grade year to around 750 students, and 2 years of drama in high school. During his last year of life, he and his sister became the first brother and sister of Gresham High School to ever make state at the same time in drama. He also placed 4th for Mr. Gresham at his high school his sophomore year. He was involved in his church youth group every Wednesday night and with his high school Christian group called Soul Food. My son's name is Aaron Wagner Sturdy. He'd be the first one to tell you, do for others before yourself. My son was headed home on his dad's bike after spending the day talking about youth group and witnessing to a friend about God and church camp when he was taken from me. I live in Gresham, the first place they started the Max Line. When they built the Max Line, it was all fields there. They were setting it up so they could take people from one side of town to the other. And when they set up the gates for the cars, but not for the pedestrians. We've now built around the Max Line, city halls, schools, malls, apartments, etc. In more recently constructed parts of Max Line, pedestrian gates have already been installed. However, on the east side, where Max began in the mid-1980s, pedestrian safety has gone ignored. In your packets, you will find a letter from the Director of Center for Advanced Learning, who wishes he could be here today, but he had a prior commitment. His letter expresses that we, quote, are on borrowed time of having a fatality at this location, referencing Cal High School Max Crossing. Following Mr. Lynch's letter, there are photos of the hazardous Max pedestrian crossing accompanied by citizens' letters that further amplify the concern over the east side lack of pedestrian safety at Max pedestrian crossings. Since 2002 until now, 3 safety gates have been installed along the west side Max pedestrian crossing at 3 stations. You can find photos of these gates in your packet. My research, there has been only 1 single collision on the west side since the installation of those gates. Meanwhile, the east side continues to have collisions causing loss of limbs and life. East side had 18 collisions compared to west side had 1. I amended Senate Bill 829 to address 1 east side location in front of the Center for Advanced Learning, where 430 advanced East County high school students attend. This location, also the connecting link and the only crossing between Gresham Station, a large multi-store shopping development, and Gresham Station North, made up of residential buildings and businesses such as State of the Arts, Adventist Health Center and Surgical Center, and an LA Fitness Athletic Club. It was recently reported in the Gresham Area Station North is scheduled to continue developing the cinema theater and additional parking for Gresham Station. The Max pedestrian crossing at Civic Drive and the Max Line is a safety concern for the merchants and the residents in the area. In your packet, you will find the signatures of those merchants on a petition imploring that you pass this bill. It is the only crossing between a multi-store shopping center and a residential building and businesses. I realize that placing safety gates at every max pedestrian crossing is a task that must be considered by many factors determined by experts. That is why I have amended Senate Bill 829, which calls for a study by a group of independent safety experts to make recommendations to the respective districts regarding the pedestrian max crossings in their areas. First, I've gathered the information from three different sources, none of which inclusive of all information. Secondly, when my representative, Linda Flores, tried to get the information from TriMet, they were told, go see ODOT. ODOT was contacted, and they said, go see TriMet. Nobody wanted to be specific. So I have assembled what I believe are accurate numbers and reflect the true conditions and safety records. That's partly why I want an independent expert to look at their records and make the total picture available to you. I've included a pie chart to show you some overwhelming numbers. I was appalled in the year that my son was killed in 2003, the MAX train hit 11 other people. 10 of them were on the East County side. And here we are, 2007, and I'm still trying to make it safe. Did you know that since 1997, 10 short years ago, there has been 53 pedestrians hit by the MAX train, approximately 60% in the East County? Furthermore, in TriMet's manual, it states they train their drivers to avoid accidents. However, experts tell me they do not follow good sound safety training. In fact, things that are avoidable are judged unavoidable because of their weak approach to safety. I'm here as a parent who doesn't want another parent or family member to go through what I've been through. TriMet continues to build more MAX lines, but yet we haven't gone back to make it safe where MAX began in Gresham. So who's going to make it safe for the people? Since my son's death, I've kept track by listening and being told of death and maimed people on the east side. If pedestrian safety were a top priority on the east side, maybe some of these lives could have been saved. I cannot bring my son back from heaven, but I can help make it safe for you and your family. Remember, I will never again get to tell my son I love him and hold him each night when I go home. In conclusion, I'm here as a mom. I've told you about my son. I've gathered the facts for you that you have not heard or seen before today. The facts are the facts. 18 to 1. 18 collisions on the east side compared to one on the west side since 2002. I've showed you the need to have a group of independent safety experts to review the at-grade crossing and findings and recommendations about the safety at the at-grade crossings. I've told you also why the urgent need to put safety gates at Civic Drive and the MAX line. Please make sure this bill passes to the committee to go on to be voted in the Senate so that it can become a law and save lives. Senate Bill 829, Aaron's Bridge to Safety. May God be with you all as you make this decision. My son had a saying, dream big. Don't ever let the little things get in your way. To me, that means, it's okay, Mom. You can't save me, but you can save someone else. Aaron's Bridge to Safety, that is what it's all about, making it safe for your children, your grandchildren, and really anyone you know. It's your decision. What is a life worth? Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Questions? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carla, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here today and bringing this bill forward to us. And I appreciate your professionalism when you came to visit with me, and you make a great citizen activist, and I hope you stay involved for many years to come.
I think she's going to run for office.
Yeah, exactly. You gave me in the packet today a list of folks who have been hit by pedestrians. This is, I guess, for Representative Flores. I think you did some of the research on this. In your testimony, you were discussing, and I'm just trying to pull from this, these are ones that you've put together, but at the bottom it says there may be more deaths and victims than listed. So was...
Do you want to know how I compiled it?
Yeah, if I could.
Okay.
And why we weren't able to get a complete list of everybody who had... Because, man, I'm trying to figure out why one of the agencies wasn't able to put together for you a complete list. And then what happened to those folks? I mean, were these deaths or injuries or what? If you can just help me, I'd appreciate
it. Mr. Chair, Vice Senators, Senator Starr, Senator George... they were made of three things. After my son died, I kept a log and listening, and the list that I brought when I met with you, that was one. Then in Representative Linda Flores's office, there was an intern. When she first started this, she compiled another list. Then in the last 5 days, a student brought to me that he got in through the Internet to talk to somebody from TriMet that sent him a list. So what I did was I took all three of those lists and put them together. But what I did notice at the one that came from this person at TriMet was there was only 4 fatalities on it. It was incomplete, and my son wasn't even on it. So I took the three lists, put them together, and compiled what you have.
Mr. Chair, follow up. So, and maybe everybody who's on the panel could help me. So far we don't have, is there no place where we can go to get actual fatality and damage information? I'm seeing TriNet nod their head. So, but so far we haven't been.
This way or this way?
Like this. So maybe I'll ask Olivia in a few minutes. But you were unable at this point, nobody at the panel was able to put together complete statistics then. Is that what we're hearing from you guys?
Yes.
Maybe we get some complete statistics from them.
We will.
Great. Thank you very much.
Senator Stark.
Thank you. It's following on Senator George's questions. Are we certain that the incidents listed on this list are pedestrian only?
Yes.
You're certain of that?
That's the Mr. Chair, Senator Starr. That's as accurate as I can get. You'll be able to find out from them, but they're, as far as I know, they're all just pedestrians.
Because one of these incidents near a MAC station by my home is one where my family was nearly run into by a MAC train that overshot the station. My wife and 2 kids in the car. So I'd be interested to know whether, well, I guess bottom line is we just need to have really good information, and it's unfortunate that the agency hasn't been able to provide that to you up till now.
I do know that I think there's been 19 to 20 deaths, and then you have on top of that, some of those could be deaths too, but main people. And what I tried to show you was that on it you can see the locations. You can see the southwest side compared to the southeast side. You can see where they started, that it's a lot worse. And now as time goes on, they've gotten better, but we haven't gone back, and we're building and building.
In Gresham.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, I appreciate, as Senator George pointed out, your activism and our many visits and how well you learn the system quickly and use it well, and I mean that in the most positive way, knowing how to actually get a result, rather than, sometimes people come in and stomp their feet and think something's happened. Other people say, I want to get something done, and you're one who wants to get something done, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
We may have some questions in a moment, but I'll dismiss you at the moment. Senator Lynn came in to watch. Would you like to testify on this bill?
Yes, please.
We'll do that, and then we'll come to TriMet.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Lim, state representative from Gresham, District 50. I'm here to support the Senate Bill 829, and I want you to know I'm carrying the, this is Aaron's picture, and I'm going to carry this button until we pass out something good from this body. So that I will continue to do that. Anyway, I'm sure you have a dash two amendment, which is as the Aaron's Bridge to Safety Act, they called 829, and also the dash three is calling the safe gate in honor of Aaron Wagner's study. I hope that my wish to pass this to the amendment in conjunction with the Senate Bill 829. And I believe she's in my district.
Is she?
Yes. And so I have come to know her maybe a month or two now. And I see her once in a while in this chamber. And I feel that as a human being, she's suffering a lot, you know, mentally, physically, in many ways. I think somehow we need to find out the way to console her soul and also the Aaron Wagner. And he was a young man with a lot of talent, and his life short cut in 2003, and I hope we can do something about it. Through my staff, we asked some information about how many accidents that involved with the humans and how many people were fatally killed through the max line. We were not able to get it. And it is amazing. At least she was able to get some information, but I was not able to get any information yet. And we need to have a full disclosed information what's happening in the max line. I am not saying this against this max line, but with the full, without full information, sometimes we might be making that the not good sound judgment. So I hope you can request as a committee, as a whole information, and how many accidents involved, and then how many people were injured, how many people were killed. And I'm hoping that with your support, we shall be able to accomplish, hopefully, at least one safe that safety gate in the Gresham area where she wants to be.
Thank you, Representative Lynn.
Thank you.
Okay. Olivia Clark, you want to come forward? And I think, thank you, Olivia. Before you begin, I mean, you've heard the testimony, and we've certainly talked about this legislation, and I will say in advance, I appreciate your work on it. The thing that probably disturbs me the most in what we've heard, and I really want you to address this, is that I know TriMet has very detailed incident reports. So I think it's really, really important to address that issue here today in terms of, A, why that information has to be cobbled together from Google and the newspaper and other things. Representative Lim has just indicated he couldn't get those things either, and I don't know the details of that. But I'd like to have you address that, and as part of that, I think the committee would like to get the accurate data on this. So that's just as a preliminary to your presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. For the record, my name is Olivia Clark. I'm here representing TriMet, and I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 829. And if you would indulge me, Mr. Chairman, I would like to provide my testimony and then address your questions. Clearly, we're very saddened by the tragedy that you've heard about here today. We regret any kind of fatal accident, whether it's an auto, traffic, or involving light rail. But before I really get into my testimony, I also want to let you know that I mentioned to you that TriMet is currently in court regarding the particular case you've heard about today, and my comments may be somewhat abbreviated because of that. Rest assured that safety is a top priority at TriMet. TriMet has a very good record, especially compared with the rest of the country and other light rail systems. And TriMet has actually developed safety design standards for light rail that was a pioneer in the country. In 1999, TriMet hired Corvi Engineering, which is an international firm that specializes in rail safety. We did that. We asked them to review the system after there was a fatality in 1999, a 14-year-old who died on baseline when he dashed into a rail crossing around a crossing gate and was struck by a train. Corey focused on the system and how pedestrians interacted with the light rail system, including platform design, pedestrian crossing, motor vehicle crossings, and other variables such as the volume of movements, the geometry of these movements, and sight lines, and how pedestrians respond to information, and much more. As a result of that, TriMet incorporated changes into the existing system, which at that time was just the East Side and the West Side MAX. They then used that information to establish safety design criteria, which they built into the system and is involved in every additional MAX line that comes into fruition, the Airport MAX, Interstate MAX, and the MAX that's now under construction, the I-205 Downtown Mall. And since that time, TriMet's design criteria has been picked up and replicated in Sacramento, San Diego, San Jose, L.A., Calgary, St. Louis, Minneapolis, and other cities. In addition to coming up with design safety design criteria, TriMet's system is rigorously scrubbed by the FTA, by ODOT, by other consultants, particularly as we add lines to the system. TriMet is required to have a system safety program plan by the FTA in order to receive any funding, and it represents the best practices of the industry. And that plan is reviewed on a triennial basis by FTA. Further, TriMet has an internal rail change review committee that consists of all the top managers in the light rail department that review safety on an ongoing basis and dissect every accident that occurs and makes recommendations to management. After the 1999 study that I referred to, the Corvey study, TriMet's approach, I think, to safety can be characterized as a three-legged stool, or the three E's. The first E is education. And what that means is really outreach to particular groups. I'll give you the example of Interstate MAX. Interstate MAX was built in an urban neighborhood where there are multiple schools. We went into the schools. We provided color books, other kinds of things, coloring books, and ways to educate people about the system. To make it safe, we still have billboards up and made a very strong effort to educate folks about the system. It also includes announcements on vehicles and written materials. The second E is enforcement. After the 1999 incident, TriMet went to the legal community and asked for stronger enforcement tools, stronger laws when it comes to trespassing on the system. Most accidents are very similar to have similar attributes to traffic collisions, where the leading factors are people that are in a hurry or people who aren't paying attention. And those risky behaviors in the enforcement area, we've tried to ratchet up what we do to keep people out of the right-of-way and enforce the law. And last, the last E is equipment, or what you could call design. And I'm perfectly happy, although in the interest of time, I don't know that I need to go through this, but to document every tool that we use at all the 362 pedestrian crossings in the system. Senate Bill 829 just focuses on one tool, which is the crossing arm, but actually we have automatic gates, we have flashing lights, warning bells. 216 of the pedestrian crossings are guarded by traffic signals. There are 68 that have passive means, such as channeling or tactile strips and signs. And there are only 12 crossings in the system, mostly in downtown Portland, that are intersections without traffic signals. I guess in closing, I would say that TriMet sees pedestrian and vehicle safety in and around the system as its responsibility, and one that it also shares with citizens and with law enforcement agencies. Mr. Chairman, as far as fatalities, I can provide that information to you off the top of my head, but I also have information here on that I can provide to the committee on light rail collisions, bicycle, pedestrian, and motor vehicle since 1994, and I'm happy to provide that to the committee if you'd like that.
We would. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what I don't have for you today is that information broken down by where in the system or the nature of the accident. But after I combed through the material, the vast majority of those incidents are really inattention. They're minor collisions, minor injuries. people are engaged in risky kinds of behavior. I'm happy to take that information back and try to dissect it down into where on the line and the actual nature of each particular incident, if that's something that the committee wants to have. As far as fatalities go, since the system was built 20 years ago, opening in 1986, there have been 19 fatalities. Of those, I would say roughly 80% have been of three different kinds. People who have been trespassing in the right-of-way, people who are intoxicated, and two suicides. Of the 19, there was one pedestrian accident where the individual went around a crossing gate, and there was one bicycle accident where the bicyclist went around across an existing crossing gate. And that's, I can put that in some sort of written format for you if needs be. But I knew that off the top of my head and could share that with you. As far as requests for information, as far as I know, they've been responded to. I apologize, but I don't recall being asked for that specific information on accidents from anyone in particular.
Okay. Well, thank you, Olivia. One thing I think would be important, just to kind of tie the loop around this as we move forward. I know Ms. Sturdy. Ms. Sturdy, you want to come back up? Because I know you had a comment you want to make. Can probably provide, you know, the context that she made. And what I would like to do, and we won't do this at this moment, but I would like to get off the committee time, Ms. Sturdy, the context that you had asked at TriMet for this information, so that we can pass that on and get some response from Olivia through channels as to why that seemed to be a difficult task. But we'll do that afterwards. Okay. But you had a comment, and then we'll ask questions for the committee. You had a comment about the study.
Mr. Chair and Vice Star, this Corby Engineer study was done in 1999. And I know about this study, and I do know they did give them recommendations. I feel you need to see this study because they didn't do all of the recommendations. In 1999, Corby Engineers did ask them to put on cattle guards because what's happened is the front of the MAX train is wide open. And so they found that it was inexpensive. They'd put it on and see how it worked. Trying to put it on for 6 months, and they took it off. And they said it didn't work. Well, how many people did they hit and kill in that 6 months? And you know what? If there would have been a cattle guard on that train, my son wouldn't have been sucked underneath it. And so I do know that the Corby report is something that I believe that would help you to give you an idea of what they did do the studies on and what areas they did. And since you said they did it, they should be able to provide that to you.
We'll ask for that. Ms. Sturdy, on our Dash 4 amendment, which will require the TriMet hire consultants to do a study on and make recommendations on the older line, which is the line that your son was killed on.
Yes.
Is that something that you're comfortable with?
To do the study, but I also would like to have the gates. Where my son was killed is not where this gate is going.
Mm-hmm.
Where this gate is going to is to a worse place than where my son was killed. And if you go and look, you would see, and I think I provided you pictures
yes.
of that. There's many places if I've looked. In 3.5 years, I've had a chance to take pictures, look at it. On 188th, they pit 8 people on a crosswalk. And what it has is it has 2 lanes eastbound, the MAX line, 2 lanes westbound. The last lady they hit, she was in a wheelchair. Now, we're all taught to stop for a pedestrian. That's what it says in our manuals. Well, if we stop and the traffic's headed eastbound and the lady's in a wheelchair, she's continuing to go, and then the MAX comes through and he hits her. I just think we do need to take a look at what the safety is out there, but it's also very important for these people to have gates at that one place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we'll go to questions. Senator Bonner Sanderson.
Just as a clarification, the amendment that addresses the crossing or the pedestrian gate that by the Cal Center, just for the committee's information, they are going to be putting in a station within, I don't know how soon, but hopefully soon, but that will become a station. And I would hope that they would definitely look at the safety. Now, whether it's a gate or a fence or whatever, I know, because we're going to be on top of it, that something will be done there.
Mr. Chair, can I speak?
Please.
Well, they wouldn't put the station right in front of the school where the crosswalk is because the front door is within 20 feet. So they would still need to have gates there even though they're going to put in an additional station.
But I'm sorry, follow up. Yeah, but
right.
there will be construction
okay.
at that point in time.
Right.
So that's when everything could happen.
Well, and certainly if we once we get the consultant's study, which will include that portion that you're talking about as well, that would be important to know. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Olivia, could you do something else for me, too? I know you're going to follow up with some additional safety information and maybe describe a little bit more about the fatalities and what the situations were in those situations, but could you also, for me, just because I'm looking at the number and it seems pretty large, because this is just light rail, this isn't all TriMet accidents, and I understand that.
Correct.
But there's a difference between obviously fatalities and then how many serious injuries, and I know you guys have probably had settlements or something where you keep track of that. How many hospitalizations there were for the ones that weren't fatalities, how many hospitalizations, and that would be kind of helpful also. And maybe just if you could break it out by where it's happening, if we can see if there's a problem, it'd be really helpful for all of us. But the serious injuries, my staff, we were discussing this on our carpool home, and they were describing a situation where somehow a light didn't go right, and they were going through, and they almost got hit by a train, and a light rail train. And I kind of it sort of got me thinking about how many times people may be hit, but they don't die. But it also indicates the significance, especially when it comes to motor vehicles. That's be interesting to me. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I'm happy to do
great.
That, to break that
thank
down.
You, thank you very much.
Other questions? Okay. Senator Deckard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just two thoughts. One is I still, and this is more, I think, towards Olivia, I'm still not clear, and it's a little bit surprising, is that there's not an easy way to access injury information. I thought when I heard it at first that I could probably walk up to my office, go online, and get a quick dissection of serious injuries, fatalities. So I'm just a bit surprised. I don't know if that's housed in one place, but if it isn't, I think it ought to be, that it should be accessible to citizens and offices, and the fact that folks had called, there's more to the story than I know, but it's just surprising if there's not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckard, I don't know if what's posted on the web. I haven't looked there myself. I do know that safety information is collated in lots of different kinds of ways for different kinds of reports. That could be part of it. But let me look into that and get back to you on where that is lodged and what the decision is to put it on the web or not put it on the web.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate that.
And then the second is just the thought of doing another study. I know how expensive consultants are. If it was studied in 1999, my vote would be to put the money into crossing stations, or the ones I'm familiar with, and these are West Side ones, do a fairly good job. You can never eliminate all. People are people, and trains are trains, and cars are cars. But that would be my one is if the study is proposed, I'd prefer to put the $100,000 or whatever that we'd spend on the study into actual crossing.
Well, a couple of things, and I'll have Olivia respond. First of all, they're going to pay for it. We're not going to pay for it. but secondly, I think you might want to clarify the study because in terms of what this does and to the studies you did before, which were on your expanding projects, as I understand, and that we haven't really done an active entire study of this original east line.
Mr. Chairman, actually the Corby study was looking at the east and the west, And then the results of that were changes in both east and west, and then the creation of the design standards that were used in the future lines. Clearly, things have changed in the whole region with growth, and I think that was referenced by earlier testimony. The Dash 4 amendment was an attempt to really focus in on where the perceived problem is on the east side, and also to create something that was perhaps more affordable. So we're not looking at the entire system again, but we're really zeroing in on just the rail that was built before 1995 and to look at just the pedestrian crossings to really focus in. Yes.
Senator George.
Yeah, just following up on Senator Deckard's question, I guess it's a very interesting thought is that we have the whole purpose behind light rail is to encourage high density development. So we build the light rail lines out there, and then we do the study, and then we do the development later. And you guys are sort of stuck with a situation where the development's coming up around it. So you may have done a study in 1999, and that's dramatically changed environment. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of TriMet's process is to revisit certain locations after the development's been put in, because that's, to me, Senator Deckard's comments just really brought that to my awareness, is that it'd be interesting to see what your procedures are about going back and revisiting those after developments go in, because that could dramatically change traffic patterns. Kids used to walk across a field, now it's, you know, mm-hmm. those kind of things, and so that would be interesting, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great point, Senator George, because having been one that drives through that area all the time from coming down, and my own business office right at the Hollywood Max station, and travel that's often through Rockwood, which is challenging for pedestrians, and also, you know, in all fairness, dangerous activities by pedestrians around there that put themselves at risk, and then going into the Gresham station. I mean, and there's been so much development that has taken place since 99 in Gresham around that line, and continues, so that, and you can even look by the numbers here, there's a lot of more train hours and activity since then, that it would seem to be proper to look at what safety improvements should be made in something that has a totally different residential and other activity relationships than it did back in 1999, because it has been so much growth. That would make a lot of sense to put that in perspective with the actual activity that's going on there.
May I speak, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
And Vice Senator Starr? Sorry. TriMet, from my understanding, used to be where they were accountability for themselves. Now I'm understanding that ODOT, a while back, is supposed to be watching over them because they had accidents and they had collisions, and so it got to be quite a few. So I would think that ODOT also should be able to provide you with that information, since they're now supposed to know that, as far as what I know.
Any other questions? Well, I think what I'd like to do, I'd like to get Ms. Sturdy's bill moving with the Dash 4 amendment and get that going. I would also, and again, appreciate your efforts on that. And Olivia, appreciate your willingness to work on this issue. I think Ms. Sturdy's suggestion is a good one. Could you see that the committee gets a copy of your 1999 core study? I think we'd be quite interesting to look at that. And whatever white paper that the that TriMet did as a result of that study, just to tell us what they did implement, and if they didn't implement things, anything, why they decided not to do certain things. I think that's just helpful overall for us, and that would be very, very interesting. And then Mr. You and I will have a conversation about your contacts and trying to get information, and I'll share those with Ms. Clark and ask her then to present to the committee once she's done some research as to what happened in the communications gap here. So we'll try to solve that for the future. Senator Starr?
Is there an overriding policy rationale that we don't have TriMet look at their entire system to make sure that we don't have these issues system-wide?
Ms. Clark?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, actually, I was trying to reduce this down to address the perceived real issue and also to make it something manageable if we're going to be paying for it. That was my rationale.
Do you have, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
Do you have a cost estimate?
No, but I can come up with one. I think the cost estimate for the Dash one, I'm not sure, the larger study, was somewhere in the range of $100,000 to $200,000.
For the Dash ones?
For the larger system-wide, and it was also more than pedestrian, and we're focusing here on pedestrian.
Well, it seems to me that if the west side or interstate or a new line, whatever it is, to 205, it seems like it would be rather cursory. I mean, you'd be able to look at those relatively quickly, but I think that there might be issues that ought to be addressed other than places, other than the line that was built prior to 95.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, if there's something in particular that you have in mind, I'm perfectly willing to work with you on that particular slides on the west side. But I was, what I was trying to do was to really zero in on what we perceive the problem to be here.
Senator George.
Yeah, what's the difference between Dash 1 and Dash 4? Is it only the scope?
Yes.
So it's the whole system versus
the scope.
Just
the
east.
Yeah, is looking at the one that was the original max line, the pre-1995 line, which is the east side line.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
I think I could write the study for you. It's going to say put gates up like we did on the new ones, on the new max line. It's going to say, I believe, put pedestrian gates up on the Gresham line, which it seems like, according to the research, that seems to be the problem area. So I might be a 1-4 here, but I just think that I'd rather put the money. I like consulting firms a lot. They're great. But it seems like the money would be better spent if it's going to be, and put it on TriMet's dime. They're due to get a big investment from the state here. So I'm happy with that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just we haven't really talked about the merits of crossing gates in this hearing today. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's someone else in the room who's prepared to address that. But I would just say, if you would indulge me, that crossing gates are really used where you have two features. You have a very bad line of sight for the pedestrian, and you have a higher speed. And those are the situations where crossing arms are called for. There are other concerns around crossing arms. There are also other ways to, passageways to deal with pedestrian behavior, whether it's channeling like the Beaverton Transit Center or other kinds of gates that may be more effective than crossing arms. But I know that Kelly Taylor is here to speak to the crossing arm issue if there's time to hear from her. If not, I just wanted to get that on the record that there are pros and cons on crossing gates.
And Mr. Chair, just...
Hold on. Senator Wallace Anderson, you may comment. And Darlin, Senator Starr.
Okay. Yes, I was talking with ODOT because I was, felt uncomfortable telling ODOT where to put a crossing gate when I truly am not an expert in safety standards regarding light rail and buses and all of that. And so she just started telling me about the concerns and problems, and I think it would be very worth the committee's while to hear from her the pros and cons of crossing gates, and they really only should go to certain places. And I think that's important for us to know.
Ms. Sturdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Star. In your packet, you can see I've given you a picture of Milliken Way, which there was a building there, and so it blocked view. But I also gave you a picture of Beaverton Town Center. Now, and that's just coming into a station. I can tell you from what I've looked at it coming into the station, such as where my son was killed, it's the same type of scenario. So they have put them there to make it so that it's safe for the pedestrian. You know, in looking at this, I can't imagine being a driver of a train that's coming into a station. You've got pedestrian crosswalks and people around, and you've got to worry about that. So I guess where I'm trying to go with this is we also have Gresham Central. And at Gresham Central, they have 6 or 7 buses that come in their plant there. That's exactly what Beaverton Transit, what she I don't know if it's Town Center or is that what it's
Transit
called?
Center.
Transit Center. That's what they have. And the reason they've done that is because what they're doing is they're traveling from one side of town to the other, and they go there, they drop them off, and when they get off the train and they have to cut right across the MAX line to get to where the buses are, and you may have an eastbound train coming through. So I just wanted to add that for the record.
Okay, Senator Stark.
Thank you. My concern is, with you know, all of the good work that Ms. Sturdy has done gathering some information, it's incomplete. And we don't have any idea where these accidents occurred. So I don't know that the problem is only on the east side. And that's why I suggest that we broaden the study. We don't have good data. The TriMet wouldn't provide it to our citizens or, you know, however that problem occurred. We don't have the information. So I'm saying if we got a problem, let's look at the system and fix the problem. And TriMet should pay for it. It's their system. And let's provide a system that protects pedestrians when, you know, they cross. The trains are quiet, you know, and I've ridden, I've taken my kids on the trains, and, you know, it's when they come rushing up there, they're millions of pounds, or not millions of pounds, thousands of pounds of train that's rushing towards you. You know, I think that we don't have good data to say 1995 and prior, as far as I'm concerned. So, if we had good data, maybe I would agree with that. But from the information that we have, I mean, with all you know, respecting the work that you've done to provide us the information you have, I don't think that it's complete.
Mr. Chairman, I am remiss in not breaking that data down for you by area, and I can certainly do that as well as break it down by the nature of the accident as well, what Senator George was asking for. And in a very cursory look on my part, it would seem that there is an imbalance, that there are more problems on the east side. But you have to trust me on that. I don't have the data for you at hand. I can certainly get it for you and break those accidents down, that report down by area.
Well, this bill is a Senate bill, Mr. Chair. If we move the bill and we get the data and it shows that there's problems system-wide, we can amend the bill in the House, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, yeah, there's, I mean, Senator Stark's points are pretty valid. I know in our discussions, Olivia, one thing that was pointed out and I think is an accurate one, since it probably does point out why we have a lot of problems on the east side, is, you know, you built this first and you kind of lessons learned have been moved on through, and probably why at Beaverton Station it looks differently because of lessons learned, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it wouldn't take or would not be a valuable exercise to look at some of that again. I do appreciate that we have an expert on the committee with Senator Decker, who already knows where those gates should go and how they should look. But
I'm not quite fair.
But I do think it's valuable to have expertise on it, because one thing has been pointed out, and we do have Kelly Tater from ODOT. If the committee at another time, because I want to be respectful of our time today because we're running out of time to talk about this, but we have had lots of discussions in transportation over the years about crossing gates, and there are problems with crossing gates too. If you don't put them in the right places, you get people stuck in crossing gates in wheelchairs and can't get out, and so we really have to have good information so that we not only put them where they belong, design them the right way, and I think that would be important. Well, I think what I'm going to do here,
I'm okay moving the bill if you want to.
Well, I'm torn, committee, between getting this bill moving for Darla and, you know, how much we want to massage it here.
She says move it.
Because we got time to work this, you know, as it moves through and on the House side to add stuff to it. But I can know what could happen if we hold it too long for her. Yes, Senator George.
Maybe, and I'm fine with either the one or the fours, but I'd like to move the ones for the same reason, because my constituents are on the west side and I'm very interested in some of the things that Senator Starr discussed. And then maybe ODOT could bring, TriMet could bring us the cost, and maybe over in the House they could amend it if it's just too expensive and narrow it down to maybe just the east side. But that would just be my preference. Obviously, I'll support whichever ones mm-hmm. you want to move, but I'd prefer it being the dash ones.
Well, the problem from my perspective with the ones is the study's too broad.
Yeah.
It'd be easier to expand the pores on the other side.
It'd be easier just to change the date on the pores than it is to adopt the ones.
Why don't we do this? We'll get your bill, Bovim. I think we're going to make a dash five. Let's see if we can possibly. This is Wednesday. Let's see if we can possibly move this bill tomorrow and work session by just having a conversation again about some modifications to this dash four that Legislative Council generally is. Olivia gets real nervous.
She's having surgery, but that's all right. We don't need you here.
We'll call in. We'll do a video conference.
Olivia, if we modified the dash four to do exactly what we have here, but system-wide, but with the language of the dash four, I mean, we have some problems with the dash one at grade crossings and things that aren't really appropriate for this type of legislation, but can we move forward that way on that? That way,
Mr. Chairman,
it's just expand. Use the dash four language, but basically delete the 1995. And in other words, make it a system-wide evaluation that we would ask you to do.
Mr. Chairman, I'm fine as long as you would let me come back with the data as well on the House side.
No. We want the data, and this committee would like to have the information that we had asked before and about that study. We'll continue to work with Chairwoman Beyer on the House side as we get this and massage this. Janet, you just look like you have something here.
Oh, no, I don't. I just wanted to make sure what you were talking about. So is that what you mean?
Well, I just think if we take out that we're constructed prior to 1995 language, I'll look at it after committee here, but I think that then makes it a system-wide evaluation.
Mr. Chair and Vice Star, does that also mean, did we decide about the crossing gate at Civic Drive?
Well, I think the important thing is this study would help determine what, you know, what it should look like and be. And I think we should get that, starting to articulate exactly what that is.
Okay. I was just going to say one more thing because you were concerned about people in wheelchairs and that.
Yeah.
I'd be interested. Remember, the facts are the facts, and when you get them, they hit one person on Beaverton side and 18 on Southeast side, and they've had the gates. So they seem to work their spring gates. I've seen them. I've taken pictures. They're not lockdown gates. They don't, like, before the train moves, you know, they lock down and move. They swing. And I've given you a picture of it in your packet that's off the Internet of TriMet. TriMet actually has a lot of information for you if you go onto the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
It will provide you with what I provided you with channeling. And at Beaverton Sound Center, the gates. And I've pulled some of the stuff off of that also.
Okay,
but thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, we'll expand this a little bit, and we'll do our best to move it tomorrow. If not, we'll definitely move it by Monday. Okay? Any other questions
this time?
Thank you very much. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 829, and we're adjourned.